Heather Summers, the 18th District Republican down there in the New London area. She co-chairs the legislature's Public Health Committee and is a member of the legislature's Appropriation Committee and is concerned about a story that a head nurse at the Whiting Institute facing 8 felony counts is collecting a $7,000 per month pension. How do you like that one, Daniel?
Well, Brad, she's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. I know she just has a few minutes with us this morning. Senator, good morning, and as always, welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
So what's going through your mind when you see this individual facing these counts? And I know you're innocent until proven guilty, but a $7,000 per month pension, Senator.
Yes, I think most people who are working in outside of state government would find the fact that you can still collect a pension after perhaps you've been, you know, obviously this person has not been tried yet, but should they be tried and found guilty of the crime, to continue to receive that type of a pension is something that would sort of fly in the face of what you would typically see in the private sector, I'll put it that way.
Is this the result of what we have gotten with the negotiations with the public employee unions?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Is this the result of what we have gotten in our negotiations with the public employee unions?
You know, this is the result of, you know, contractual obligations that go back, you know, or haven't been changed in years before I was a senator. You know, the only negotiations really that have happened as far as this particular union had to do with, you know, wage freezes and hiring freezes for the next 4 years. I don't believe that, you know, pension in this particular circumstance was on the table. I could be wrong, but that's not something we saw as a change as far as the contracts were concerned. So, yes, this is something that is contractually negotiated in the contracts, and that's why it's so important going forward that the legislature will be required to vote on these contracts. And I know that I have heard from many legislators who are extremely concerned that this is something that is allowed per the contracts, and it's something that they would like to see changed in the future. It's very difficult to go back and try to take something away from someone that's contractually obligated, but we certainly do have the ability to you know, lobby the Attorney General, and should this person be found guilty of the crimes that they've been accused of, ask that they go in and to strip away the pension. That has been done in the past for certain crimes that have committed that are, in my opinion, much lesser you know, sort of egregious action than this one is here in particular. So that's something that absolutely could be done to try to, you know, if there is a remedy for what has been done, to try to look at that. You know, and that pension is based on, you know, overtime being added to a base salary, too. So keep in mind that, you know, the person's base salary would not equate to a $7,000 a month pension. You know, it would be much less because this person's pension is based on their last 3 years in which massive amounts of overtime were worked and allowed to be added towards the pension. I will say, if there's one thing that we could change in the state of Connecticut to help the fiscal crisis that we are experiencing, it would be to allow state employees to work overtime as needed, but to not allow it to count towards their pension, because that is just not sustainable going forward. And that's what has been, you know, happening for years and years. So you have people retiring at much higher salaries, sometimes 2 and 2.5 times their salary, retiring out because of the unlimited overtime added towards their pension.
Senator Summers, you know, one of the things that has bothered me for many years, and I'm sure many Connecticut residents, we know the salaries, we know pensions, we know, we hear it all the time. Why can't government, our government in Connecticut, led by the governor, come up with a plan that doesn't work this way? This is the reason that we are so in debt, and that we're going to get more and more in debt, and our taxes are going to go up even more. Why can't we correct this? Can you answer that question?
Well, you know, to you know, just to be clear, these contracts are not negotiated by the legislature. They are negotiated between the governor and the unions. So the legislature has no input in how these are negotiated. The only input that the legislature has is to vote it through, yes or down. And for many years, the legislature has chosen no action, so they just don't vote because they are then not on record of voting for or against something, a contract. And if there is no action taken, the contract goes into effect automatically. And that's what has happened for years and years. And this is the first year, I believe, in a very long time that you have seen the legislature vote on the CBAC agreement. And for people who are listening, the vote was 18-18. It was strictly party line, 18 in the Senate anyway, 18 Republicans voting against it, 18 Democrats voting for the CBAC agreement. And the tie vote was the lieutenant governor who voted with the Democrats. And so what that has done is locked us in until 2027.
Wow.
There is, in this contract, there is, you know, some marginal givebacks that the state employees have agreed to, you know, pay more for their health care, pay more into their pensions. But there was nothing touching any of the real structural changes that need to be made, like the unlimited overtime. There was a four-year no layoff clause, so no one can be laid off for 4 years. And that was something that, for me, in the private sector, I cannot imagine ever having a guarantee that you're going to have your job for 4 years. That just doesn't exist. And so that's the deal that we are locked into. The one thing that was not talked about was in each one of these individual agreements, there was a lot of changes that added cost to the contract. That's not something that anybody wanted to discuss, really. But you know,
yeah. What has happened in those areas? Where are the added costs?
Well, I can give you a few examples. I don't have the contracts in front of me, but I remember a few. A few of them are like this. If you were allowed to spend 275 hours on union business that you were paid for by the state of Connecticut, that went to 400. If you were a college professor,
it went to 400.
Yes. If you were a college professor and you worked X amount of miles away from where you taught, you were then given a $100 a day food allowance.
Yeah.
You know, things like this that just added up. When you started to add them up, they added cost to the contract. But again, this CBAC agreement was given to us, you know, in the 12th hour, so to speak. You have to vote on it. And one of the questions we asked, it's made up of all these individual contracts. So what does this add to this contract? What does this add? And OFA, the Office of Fiscal Analysis, didn't have time to give us what those costs were.
Wow.
But yet they pushed it through. So, you know, unfortunately, that's how things tend to happen here in Hartford, I've learned. But unlimited overtime is something that obviously has to be addressed going forward because it's just not sustainable for the state or anybody, you know, living here. And also, you know, I think that there's, after speaking with so many legislators, there's definitely a push to, you know, revisit this. If you are someone in the private sector that commits a crime, if you were a nurse or a physician or something in the private sector that had committed a crime that involved injuring a patient or abusing a patient in which you were responsible for caring for, it would be very likely that you would not receive, first of all, there are no pensions in the private sector, but secondly, you probably would lose your employer match if you had a 401k based on your actions. So, it's difficult to equate apples to apples because the private sector doesn't really provide pensions any longer. So they're not in a position to take them away.
But is there any way that somebody could come in here and start changing this so that we will not be this way for the rest of our lives? I mean, Connecticut's not going to survive if we don't change something.
When we have a new governor, that governor should be the person who should be able to make the difficult changes that will have to be made in the state of Connecticut for not only the state survival, but for the people that reside here, the taxpayers, the employers, the students, the elderly, for everyone that is still living here in Connecticut, for their survival so that they can reside here and continue to reside here. significant changes will have to be made. And they're not going to be popular. They're not going to be, you know, changes that the majority of people that are working in state government will like. And I can give you a perfect example. We are facing, you know, this massive deficit. We, right now, the budget is out of balance by, I think it's close to $210 million. We're expecting it to grow and escalate as the year ends. We have shown the governor places that the governor can save money. Through, they call it holdbacks, where he could consolidate things, where he could save money. But he has chosen to not do that and instead to go back to our municipalities and to our education system and cut funding even further.
That's right.
Rather than doing things like consolidating commissions, looking at the high executives and saying, look, we don't need this level of management. That is not included in the unions. This is non-union positions. And saying, you know what, instead of these political appointments, we're going to do the right thing and get rid of this layer that we don't need here. He's still hiring people. I mean,
well, Senator, I know we're running out of time and you have to go, but my biggest fear is we get near the holidays and people aren't paying attention, and this governor's been known to sneak in even more hires and raises during this time of year. So expect more is all I'm saying, Senator.
Well, I can tell you that I know that my caucus is watching. We're watching every day with a fine-tooth comb. Our leader is on top of things, and you know, we are not going to let those sort of things slip by. Or if the governor does go ahead and go forward with these types of changes that you've just mentioned, I'm sure that we will be talking about them.
Well, I'm sure we will.
You, Senator, will, I know.
Yeah. Senator, thanks so much. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you.
Merry Christmas. Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Take care. You as well. Take care.
You know something? I like it every time we get her on.
Well, me too.
She's a fighter.
Well, and she ran for lieutenant governor the last time. I think she would have been a very good lieutenant governor had she won. But I've got to say, Brad, tomorrow could be a very key day. The governor has been known to do this, usually the Friday before Christmas, when people are focused on Christmas and shopping and all that, announcing he's hired this one or he's given that one a raise. So tomorrow could be a very nice day for some people in state government who work for this governor.
And he knows what situation we are in. This is what drives me crazy.
We can't afford it.